And welcome to In the Studio with Linus from around the world in the chat room or on the phone. We're so glad that you're joining us today. We discuss hot topics, news of the day, and we even tackle hard subject matter. We may not always be on the same page or agreement, but that's what makes this show special. You're entitled to agree or disagree. Isn't that wonderful? Keep an open mind and continue to think outside of the box. As a close friend told me, the truth is a lie, which also is a book by that title, and the author is Harry Pisanis. So please join us in the chat room with your opinions or call us on the phone. The phone number is 646-727-2914. The website is www.theessenceofsuccess.net. If there is a subject you would like to see discussed, contact us at the website and leave a message or comment. And or you can also, we're on Facebook, the Essence of Success Radio Network. We are here to empower you and make you think. We don't have all the answers, but we'll find the questions to be answered and understood. Thank you for supporting and listening to the show. I hope that each show will give you food for thought, as they say, something to think about and discuss around the water cooler. Now, today, folks, we have a special guest, and we're just so happy and proud and tickled to have this young lady with us today. The subject of the show today for In the Studio with Linus is human trafficking. So we have with us Ms. Audrey Batke. Audrey Batke started supporting survivors of the sex trade about 15 years ago when her friend was recruited by a pimp, and she volunteered with an organization that did late-night outreach. She is now the program manager at REST REST. REST offers a continuum of care for sex trafficking victims and survivors of the sex trade that includes street and text outreach, a 24/7 hotline, community advocates, and a drop-in center, emergency shelter, and a year-long residential program. Now, for you folks, before I bring Audrey in, for you folks that don't know what human trafficking is, the definition comes from the Trafficking Victims Protection Act of 2000, 2003, 2005, and 2008, which defines severe forms of trafficking as A, sex trafficking in which a commercial sex act is induced by force, fraud, or coercion, or in which the person induced to perform such an act has not attained 18 years of age. B, the recruitment, harboring, transportation, provision, or obtaining for labor or service through the use of force, fraud, or coercion for the purpose of subjection to involuntary servitude, debt, bondage, or slavery. Note that the victim need not be physically transported from one location to another in order for the crime to fall within these definitions. Now, without further ado, let me bring in Ms. Audrey Batke. There we go. Good evening, Audrey. How are you, young lady?
Good evening. I'm doing well.
All right. Very good. Well, Audrey's going to be answering questions, and I do have something to say. I'm sorry that the chat room is not open tonight. I don't know what's going on with Blog Talk Radio. So you're going to have to call in, and I'm going to put you on the air to answer the question. So just to let you know. Okay, so Audrey, we know a little bit about you, which is good. Is there anything that you would like to add to your portfolio there?
Nothing that I would like to add. I think one thing that I will speak about throughout the next hour, and we'll just make a plug on at this moment, is the individuals that we have been able to serve at REST that have experienced the sex trade are incredible human beings. And I don't know what everyone's background or experience or understanding of trafficking is, and individuals that have been involved in sex acts, including commercial sexual exploitation and sex work. But I find it's common for people to have misconceptions, and so I hope that throughout the evening I can be able to expand on what perceptions are and really be able to speak to the character of the individuals that I have been able to meet, who are often very strong, resilient individuals.
Okay. Wow, that sounds good. Okay, well, let's begin. The first question up is, what's the difference between human trafficking and human smuggling or slavery?
Yes. Now, I should have maybe asked for these questions up front, so I'll have to think fast as I answer them. Smuggling often refers to drug smuggling is where we hear that. And often refers to the movement of the product. And with sex trafficking, as you mentioned, there is no need for that movement to take place. And so a person can be born in the U.S. and sold for sex in the U.S., and that is considered trafficking if force, fraud, and coercion are in place, and does not have to move across any borders in order to be considered human trafficking. Human smuggling, I think, often refers to folks that are moving from one country to another and being moved in a secretive manner from one place to another for the purpose of either labor or sex work.
Okay. Okay, now who would be vulnerable to become a victim of domestic or international human trafficking?
Our experience is that there are individuals of all ages, all genders, and all walks of life who have been involved in human trafficking. Some things that we do look at that make a person more vulnerable is being someone that is kind of more vulnerable in our society in general. If we look at the statistics, studies show pretty regularly, and it lines up with our experience, that an individual is likely to be recruited into the sex trade when they're between 11 and 14 years old. And some of the things that traffickers often look for are someone who is looking for love, someone who is looking for affirmation, someone who is looking for someone that is older that is going to be able to care for them, provide for them, and emotionally support them. And if I think of myself at 11 to 14 years old, I think myself and most of my classmates would have fit in that category. And oftentimes that is something that traffickers are looking for. There are also factors that make a person more vulnerable, being in a family that has neglect or violence in the home, if sexual abuse is already prevalent. I will always remember one of my clients who said, "Why not sell what my uncle took for free?" And there is something, too, if I have already been abused sexually, then I am more vulnerable to be exploited in this way. In the same way, being born into poverty or experiencing poverty, having mental health issues, chemical dependency, having developmental delays, are all factors that can make a person more vulnerable to being involved in the sex trade. Another piece to look at is immigration status. If a person is not able to get legal work, then oftentimes being involved in the sex trade can be a means of providing for themselves and for their family. And then another factor is our LGBTQ community and transgender community. And in particular, thinking of our transgender folks, if I'm being discriminated against and I can't find employment and I'm having a hard time finding housing, oftentimes the sex trade is actually an industry that can be very welcoming to folks that are transgender, because it's a place where I can make money and I can be affirmed for the things that I am able to do, and then I'm able to provide for myself. And in other places of society, if we do not make space for our vulnerable populations to thrive, then they're going to be susceptible to being involved in the sex trade.
Wow. It's really interesting. Well, Audrey, let me ask you this. Who are the traffickers? You know, you just explained the victims, how they're recruited and controlled. But who are these traffickers?
Just as I can say that victims can be all ages and all genders, all ethnicities, all backgrounds, we see the same thing is true for our recruiters or our pimps or our traffickers. One very common type of trafficker is the boyfriend pimp. And this is the man that comes in and says, I see you, I know you, and I think you're valuable. I think you are worth something and you could really do something with your life. I love you, baby, and let's do it together. And this type of trafficker often forms an intense emotional bond with their victim, to where the victims often develop trauma bonding, where they are very loyal and very dependent and defend their trafficker. Again, I think of a client that had said there would be moments that she would be beat up or she would be drastically harmed. And then he would hold her, and in that moment, she never felt so loved and loved, unloved at the exact same time. And the boyfriend traffickers often use this emotional bond as a way of keeping a person loyal to them, and therefore getting them to be able to work for longer periods of time. We also see a gorilla pimp, and this is kind of the stereotypical violent pimp that maybe kidnaps someone, maybe uses threats and violence to keep a person loyal. The difference between this and the boyfriend pimp is that they typically don't have the same emotional bond, but there is also this level of fear that can be instilled with the boyfriend pimp. So they're not clear distinctions, but what we do see with kind of this gorilla type pimp is that the only reason the person stays is because they're fearful for their lives or the lives of their family members. We also see organized crime. And I think with organized crime in particular, there are many different facets and ways that it can look depending on the group of people that are running their operation. One type that we have seen has been kind of this white-collar business organized crime that has literally involved a board of directors of, in this case, all men, that were gathering together as business partners, planning their business and operations together. We've also seen this with more street-based gang organized crime. And one thing, again, that a client had said is with drugs, you use the product once and then it's gone. But with girls, you can use them over and over and over again, and the product just keeps going. And so we've seen an increase in gang trafficking as a way to be able to make the most of their product, if you want to think it in such crass terms. And then the other trafficker that we see regularly is a parent. And these are some of the most a parent. So a child's mother or father that is actually their trafficker. And these are some of the most heart-wrenching cases, including a gal who said, I know for sure I was sold at 2, but I imagine it happened before that. And sometimes this is a person that says, my mom was a hoe and my dad was a pimp. What else could I expect? Other times it's an individual that their parent is a part of a trafficking ring. And so their parent continues to exploit them at a very young age and then continues that throughout their childhood. The other thing that I'll put out there is that we do see peers as recruiters or traffickers. And typically what this looks like is if I go and stay at a shelter and I'm feeling desperate because I don't have any money and I don't have anybody that's caring for me and my safety net is gone and I meet another woman who says or who appears to have lots of money and appears to have it together. And she's got that Gucci bag and she's looking really good and it's something that I want for myself too, then it's easy for me to go to her and say, hey, how'd you make this happen? And for her to say, let me teach you the ropes. And as I teach you how to post and I teach you how to do the work, I'll take a portion of your money as I'm talking about with your business. And then there can also be bonding that happens in that to where I might become loyal to this person. And then the last thing that we often talk about is that poverty itself can become a trafficker for a person. And it's very common for someone to get involved in the sex trade because someone comes in and recruits them. And then once I'm in the sex trade, I'm working for them and I'm loyal to them and I get to a place where I can't get out, but maybe I can get away from that person that first recruited me. And so I might leave that person, but then I still have to overcome the barriers of finding employment, being able to manage my money, being able to have a stable place to live. And if those barriers feel too great, then I might continue to engage in sex work by my choice at this point, or so it seems. But really it's in part because I can't get the pieces together to be able to live kind of this, what is called the square life, in a manner that will still provide for me and my worst and sometimes my children. And so poverty can continue to be a driving factor in keeping a person involved. Another piece is if I get involved with drugs, then sometimes that is going to be my motivation to keep doing sex work. Another gal that I had talked with had said heroin was her worst boyfriend and her worst pimp. And once that chemical dependency can take hold, then that can be even one more barrier on top of everything else to be able to leave.
Right, because now they're controlling them with the drugs.
Mm-hmm.
How do you identify a trafficking victim? Now, you said from different scenarios where you can reach, but just you, if there was somebody to come to you, well, I wouldn't say come to you. If you saw it in a group, maybe a few women, would you be able to identify that maybe one or two people in there is a possibility in trafficking?
Yeah. In fact, we've got a list of signs of involvement that we often share with folks. And things that can be looked for is someone that is moving around from city to city, or if they're underage or younger, if they're constantly truant or constantly running away from home, or if they're homeless. Now, if someone is homeless, that doesn't mean that they're involved in the sex trade, but it means that it's a sign that they might be. We had a couple women that came to our drop-in center recently, and we were explaining who we are and who we work with and asked them if that description fit them. And one of them said, of course I'm homeless. I have no other choice to survive but to sell sex. And her friends that were with her all nodded their heads saying, yeah, this is our common experience. The other thing, if you think about moving from city to city, if I am homeless and I don't have money for myself, I probably can't move myself from here to California and then Las Vegas and then back. If I am able to do that and I don't have a home, it's worth asking the question of where that money is coming from. Other things that we can look for are having excess amounts of cash, new clothing, having nice hair, having good nails, having the style, but lacking basic needs, lacking basic paperwork, lacking an address, can be a sign that that money is coming somewhere and may not be enough to sustain me to have all of my needs met, but is to able to sustain me to have the glamorous things met. Another sign to look for is someone that is carrying around with them their hotel keys, having provocative clothing, having sex toys, having condoms. I'll always remember a gal talking about going through security at the airport and how embarrassed she was when they opened up her suitcase and she had all of her work items in one place. And the reality
she had all
is
what
that
in one place?
All of her work items. So having condoms,
Lord.
Having the clothes.
Right.
And that was just her reality. We had another gal that had worked with us for a while, and she called us one day and said, I got recruited by this pimp, and I can't leave him. Can you please call a cab and have them take me to rest? And we took the risk, and we did it. And when she showed up, she had a suitcase that was full of lingerie. And it was one of the most beautiful moments of my life where she dumped out the entire suitcase into the garbage can, and then she shopped in our resource closet and picked out clothes that she could wear moving forward.
Wow. Wow. Bless her heart. That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Another sign that you can look for is having multiple phones. Oftentimes, I don't want to mix my work and my business, and so I might keep separate phones to be able to keep track of that. Also, different traffickers will sometimes keep different phones for different reasons. So that can be a sign that someone is involved in the sex trade. Another sign to look for is signs of branding. So it is common for traffickers to brand their name on the individuals that are working for them. So that might be their initials or that might be their full name. We've seen a lot of references to daddy or to different signs with money. And again, if you see someone with a tattoo, that doesn't mean that they're involved in the sex trade, but it could. It's a sign to look at.
Right.
A few other things to look at is if someone feels like they are, or if someone is reporting to a controlling person. I think in particular about times that we've met people in the emergency room and how they often feel like they need to get back to their trafficker or get back to their pimp to let them know where they're at and what's going on. And so they don't feel like they can make the decisions for themselves, but they're always wanting to check with someone else first.
Oh, boy.
Another sign would be seeing some illogical relationships. So maybe seeing somebody that's in their 50s with someone that's not related to them in their teens, especially if they kind of have this flirtatious relationship or they're kind of like joking with one another. It's worth looking at what is going on. Same thing if you see kind of an older man with several younger girls and they're all treating him in kind of this flirtatious, loving way, that could be a sign of somebody being involved. And then the last things are looking for inconsistencies in stories or signs of trauma. Oftentimes, when our clients encounter professionals, whether that is social workers or medical providers or law enforcement, they don't feel like they can be upfront about what is going on, and so they'll often be piecing some stories together that might not make sense. Or they might be actually trying to express themselves and share what's going on, but because of the trauma that they've experienced, it's hard to piece that together in a logical manner, and it comes out inconsistent and with a lot of questions. So once again, with these signs, if you see one of these, it doesn't mean someone's involved. But if you see many of them, then it's worth having a further conversation to see if somebody is involved.
Right, or let somebody know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wanted to ask you about this only because I saw this list where you can find victims who have been trafficked. They've got modeling studios. Is that true? You said hospitals, which is on the list too, but modeling studios?
So escort
services, which I can believe that. I'm sorry, Audrey, go ahead.
Tell me what this list is once again.
No, they have modeling studios. You said hospitals and escort service, yes. Massage parlors. They just had a case here in Washington not too long ago, I think last year or so. And shelters, where people go for help, you know, to stay in shelters if they snatch people out of there as well. Wow.
Yep.
Because that brings up something to me about daycare.
Yeah.
Daycare places or after-school activity places.
Yep. I remember talking with a man who had formerly been a pimp. And he said, wherever your children are, that's where traffickers are. And as a mom,
wow,
that has been a haunting statement for me. But it can give that picture that this is their business. And it's hard to find people that are willing to trade sex for money. And so they have to find someone who is vulnerable and willing to do the work. And oftentimes, again, if we're looking for someone who is craving that love and attention, our young kids are so susceptible to that.
Yes. Yes, because they've been taught to respect your elders and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And that's kind of hard, too, because when you were saying earlier about the woman with the uncle, when you have family incest, what do you do then? How do you respect that?
That's very true.
Well, I've got a question. I got to ask this right now. Do you ever catch some of these traffickers that are moving these children or teenagers or young adult women around? I want to get into is what are the police doing about this? Maybe that's a question I should ask.
Great question. In King County in particular, our law enforcement has moved in a direction where they recognize individuals that are selling sex as most often being victims. And instead of putting their efforts into arresting the people who are selling sex, they are putting their efforts into arresting the people that are forcing the sex acts to happen. So that would be the traffickers or the pimps. They also are putting more emphasis on arresting the buyers of sex, recognizing that they play a role in continuing the demand for sex, which allows this industry to flourish. However, with that said, I will say that trafficking cases can often take years to prosecute. And while our law enforcement, and in particular in King County, is doing a great job at taking the reports and building evidence and being able to prosecute the folks that are trafficking individuals, it is not an easy process, and it's often a very painful process for the victims involved.
Well, let me ask you, Audrey, are you ever in danger as you are helping these folks?
It's possible. However, we haven't seen a threat while we've been at rest and have not had an incident around it. I do remember a gal explaining to me, my man's never going to touch you guys because you guys will call the police right away. So he knows that he doesn't want to go near you. He also knows that I will come back to him when he texts me. And as strong and as powerful and as empowering as you are, I know that the bond that he has with me is much stronger. And I feel like we have seen that over and over again, that rather than a trafficker coming after us as service providers, they just go straight to the person that they have the relationship with the survivor themselves. And oftentimes they have such a strong emotional bond that that can be enough to bring their person back. And we don't have a strong enough bond to be able to fight that.
So how many times would they go back and forth before they realize that, you know, they've been used, their bodies have been used in their minds?
Yeah, there actually is not a statistic on that. We know that for domestic violence survivors, it takes an average of 7 times of leaving their abusive partner before they leave for good. And we often say that it might take more like 7 times 7 for our folks, because it's 7 times to leave the man that they feel like they love, 7 times to leave the money that they were able to make, 7 times to leave the excitement and the adrenaline that they experienced, 7 times to leave the substance that they became chemically dependent. And so there are lots of things that our folks have to overcome in order to exit. But we do see them exit, and we do see that happen. But the amount of strength that it takes is incredible, because they are leaving the life that they know.
That's true. So they need to conduct a continuous risk assessment with respect to the safety and welfare of the victims and their families.
And one thing we do a lot is that safety planning, to be able to say, what are the threats that have been made against you, and what are the plans that are possible? We also look at not only the threats that the trafficker poses to an individual, but also for that individual, what are the things, what are the unhealthy skills that you have picked up along the way that are now going to sabotage you in your success? And how can we come up with a different plan so that you can move forward and not continue to be stuck where you've been at?
Wow. How does this affect you, Audrey, as an advocate?
Great question. For anyone that has done direct service, we are all susceptible to secondary trauma, and that is where I might not experience trauma myself, but I begin to take on some of the symptoms of trauma because of all of the stories that I've heard. And I will say that over the years, I have increased in post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms, and there have been different times where it is hard to sleep at night, or I feel overwhelmed with grief. And it is absolutely necessary for, and like any of us that are engaging in this topic, to be able to be aware of how it affects us and how to be able to care for ourselves in the midst of it. Particularly when we're doing direct service, we don't want to make our clients care for us. And so we need to be very mindful that we are caring for ourselves so that we can care for others. And honestly, I would argue that doing this work has made me a better person, because it has made me go to therapy and have a bedtime and eat healthy foods and practice every coping skill that I teach, because I need it just as much.
Well, I'm asking about you because dealing is such a dark area of life, you know, and to deal with that, you're trying to instill light into darkness, but still it's got to bother you at some point in time too, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Even just this past week, we have a gal who passed away, and while I can talk about it right now, there have been moments where I just have to stop and cry and grieve the loss of a life.
Yes. And I definitely understand that. Yes. This is so true.
Now, on the flip side, before we end this, I have to say that there also is so much hope and encouragement that I see in doing this work that makes it worthwhile to be able to hold the grief and the hope at the same time. And I don't know how many times we have seen what I would call miracles, where we are looking at all the options that exist and not finding a good option. And then somewhere out of nowhere comes the best option available that no one of us could have made happen. And it gives me the sense, too, of this belief of something greater than myself and getting to be a part of something that is good in this world, that combats these very evil, dark places that we see. I also have to say that most of our clients have an incredible sense of humor that keeps us laughing in the midst of the tragedy. And so it's also very encouraging to see the ways that they are able to keep their joy even in the midst of immense struggle.
Let me ask you something. Do you think if they legalized prostitution, would that help or not? They would still go after children?
I do not think it would help. And the reason I take this stance is because I do believe that the more demand there is for sex, the more victims will be. And if prostitution is legalized, then there will be a number of people, I think, that would step forward and engage in prostitution that currently are not because of the laws. And if there is more demand, then there's going to need to be more supply. And if the supply doesn't exist, then there will be traffickers who will create that supply in order to make that money.
Okay. Are there community programs besides yours that women can go to, or, you know, to feel safe or talk to someone? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me ask now, we've been talking about females, but let me ask, what about the men, the males, young boys?
Yeah, there have been some studies done that have gone to vulnerable populations, primarily homeless shelters for youth, but also some programs that work with at-risk youth. And they asked the young people there, have you engaged in sex work? Have you been asked to engage in sex work? And the percentage of girls that said, yes, I have, was almost the same percentage as boys in each of the studies. Now, while this study is not conclusive, it does give us evidence to see that there is a demand for boys and men, and it may be as high as the same percentage as it is for girls. At REST this past year, we launched a program to be able to work with all genders, recognizing that a large percent, like in the 99-ish area, of our clients were females. And so wanting to be able to offer services that would be specific to our male and transgender clients. And while we have not matched the same number of females, our goal is really to be growing trust with this community. And we have seen that there have been a number of boys and men who have reached out and asked for that support.
Okay. Are the women more forthcoming than the males?
Yes. In our society, while I would say very few mainstream cultures accept prostitution, there is an added level of shame for boys and men that are engaging in prostitution. There also is this misnomer that because they're boys, they must like it or they must want it. And I think even for our boys and men themselves, they can very much believe that. And because of that, not see ways that it can do harm in their own lives as well.
Okay. Is there a connection between human trafficking and military bases?
I don't know if there are studies or statistics on that. I do know that our clients regularly talk about there being a demand for trading sex within our military and at our bases. And I think that it is particularly noteworthy to them because it is very hurtful when the people that are meant to protect our country are the people that are harming them specifically. So I don't know if it's something that stands out in their mind and they talk about a lot because it is such a harmful experience or if it's because it's such a prevalent experience. But there does seem to be greater demand for sex within our military.
Okay, well, you know, the UN peacekeepers were implicated in human trafficking in Bosnia.
Uh-huh.
The New Yorker recently reported allegations of third country nationals being trafficked to work on U.S. military bases, like in Iraq. Yes.
Oh. So tragic. Yeah. It really is.
Yeah, it is. It's UN peacekeepers. Yes, ma'am, it is. Okay, well, why doesn't the federal government do more to stop it, or are they?
Great question. I will say, having done this work for 15 years, they are doing much more now than they have previously. And I have to give a shout out because one of our funders at the moment is from a federal grant. So I do think that they are doing some things to be able to address human trafficking, but this is a fairly young movement, and awareness about it is not prevalent yet, and even our understanding of it within our government is not always on the same page or unified. I have hope that as we move forward and in the future, we will see more and more funding available and more unified efforts in combating human trafficking. And we have come a long way in the past 10, 15 years. But I would agree that we have not yet arrived and there is much work to still be done.
Okay, do you know who Christine Blasey Ford is? Have you ever heard of her?
The name
sounds
very familiar.
Okay, I'm going to read this real quick. It's real short. Her story, spoken while holding back tears, shook Washington and the country. Her courage in the face of those who wished, to silence her and to galvanize Americans, and her unfathomable sacrifice out of a sense of civic duty shined a spotlight on the way we treat survivors of sexual violence here in this country. Christine Ford's ambition wasn't to become a household name or make it onto the list. She had a good life and a successful career and risked everything to send a warning in a moment of grave consequence. At her core, she's a teacher, and through her courage, she forced the country to reckon with an issue that has too often been ignored and kept in the dark, which kind of segues from what you were just saying, you know, as far as the federal government. Because I wonder about that. Even like when women get raped, they may report it and do everything that they're supposed to do, but the case doesn't really come forward unless it's like in the news.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like it's a real build-up media blitz or something, and then it'll get talked about. But there's so many cases that they're behind. Just in rape, and I'm thinking, look, this is human trafficking. They're so far behind in so many of the states on rape cases. What are they doing for these human trafficking? Because you're talking about all ages now, male and female.
It is very
true. Well, let me ask you this. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that even seeing that 10 years ago in King County, we had juveniles that were in detention for prostitution. And at that same time, we had this law that said that if you are under 18, then you are a victim of human trafficking if you are selling sex. And yet we were criminalizing our kids who were being trafficked. And we continue to see there be the stigma that is attached to the folks that are involved in prostitution, even if it's not their choice to be involved. And I think that it is a great success for us to see that in King County we are going after the buyers and going after the traffickers and not criminalizing the sellers. But that's not the case for many of the counties in Washington or states in the United States. And so there is a lot to be said for punishing the victim over and over again.
Yes. Yes, you tell your story once and you got to tell it three more times. You get to the point that you don't even want to be bothered because you're already at a tragic moment, and here's another trigger, right? So, well, let me ask you this now. Audrey, what can the community members do to help stop human trafficking? What can we do? How can we get involved?
I think one of the most important things is looking at what our spheres of influence are, what our gifts and our talents are, and asking how those can be used. One thing that I often will promote at trainings is, while there isn't a clear statistic on how many men, though statistics do show that about 99% of buyers of sex are men, it's not clear how many men do purchase sex, but there are some studies that show that it could be up to 20% of our population. And if we know men in our lives, then one thing we could do is talk about this. Talk about the effects that it has on the individuals that are purchased, as well as our society as a whole, for this to be something that we allow. And be able to have conversations with one another, not in a way that evokes shame, because I strongly believe that you cannot get rid of shame with shame, but in a way that is able to raise awareness and highlight the harm that is done. Another thing that people can do is look at what their specific gifts are and how that could be used with an organization, whether that be a vulnerable population, whether that be with a school or with kids, or whether that would be in a nonprofit that is specifically working with survivors. I will make the shameless plug that at REST we have a number of individuals that come in and help staff our drop-in center or help lead a workshop. Right now we have a woman that works at U.S. Bank and comes in and talks about money management and debt reconciliation. We have another gal that used to come in and do art. So being able to look for the ways that the gifts that we have can meet this need that exists.
Okay. Because I imagine that your job or your organization, like you said, is 24/7, so there's never a downtime because there's no downtime for them. Yeah.
That's the truth.
Well, how do you think Washington State is addressing this? Are we doing a good job or average or below? How are we doing with this human trafficking?
I know that if you look at the National Trafficking Hotline Center, there are statistics that rate states based off of how they are doing responding to this. To be honest, I do not remember what Washington State was rated. And I'm not as dialed in with our state as a whole. I do serve with the King County Commercial Sexual Exploitation of Children Task Force. And with the King County Task Force, I think that we have made great strides in responding to this issue and have really brought together lawyers, law enforcement, social workers, and other individuals to be able to have a unified response. And I will say from my experience, it has been top-notch. and have met a lot of individuals that are really wanting to collaborate and find the ways that their roles can fight human trafficking.
Okay. Yeah, I just remember, too, back in March, there was a case, 26 women got rescued in Seattle Human
mm-hmm.
Trafficking Bus. You remember that? Yeah. Yeah. Because
mm-hmm.
they investigated, I think, 11 businesses? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. I'm scared to go to, I like a nice massage, Audrey. I'm scared to go to
mm-hmm.
any massage parlors now. I truly am. I mean, unless it's like by Swedish Hospital, you know, it's real reputable or something like that. But I'm scared. And I used to love to go have massages, but
mm-hmm.
I don't know now.
Well,
I
one thing I will say about massage parlors is there are some that are very obvious about it. If they don't open until 8 p.m. at night and they stay open until 2 a.m. in the morning, they might be doing more than just massage. Another thing that
yeah.
you can consider while you're there is the people that are working there. Are they talking about their commute to work or how they changed to work at that massage parlor and not another one because it was closer to their home? Do they talk about their family and having access to their family? If they're showing signs of agency and control in their own lives, then they probably are not involved in trafficking. Now, on the flip side, if they live in the shop or they are very concerned about the person that's running the shop or they show signs of fear or signs of trauma, then that might be a sign that they're involved in human trafficking. So it doesn't mean that every massage parlor is involved in human trafficking, but there are some that have made their business from this.
Yes, because I went to a couple and I turned right around and I live in the Federal Way area. And it was kind of dark, and I was like, man, you know what? I've been to spa massages where they have their wares out front, you know, if you want for lotion and different things like that. And there's a receptionist there and have a seating area. And then they would call you, right, to come back for your massage, whatever. These couple of places I went to recently, one is in Des Moines. The other one is here in Federal Way. Soon as you walked in, Audrey, just black. Just dark. I was like,
mm-hmm.
are you closed? I asked the lady, I said, are you closed? But the sign out front said you're open. She said, yes, we're open. And I just got the hair up on my back,
mm-hmm.
and I just told her, never mind. I walked out the place. And I did it with the second one, too, because you don't look professional. I've been
mm-hmm.
professional, which I assume everybody is, but, you know, which they are not, but it doesn't even look professional. So I just turn around and walk out. I get scared. I was like, no, no.
Mm-hmm.
No. So.
Yeah. And I think that feeling might be a very real sense of intuition. And I know that the National Human Trafficking Hotline welcomes tips like that. And the massage parlors that were in this recent sting came from tips that came from neighbors that noticed the clientele, and notice the odd hours of operation. And so if you have that intuition, you can always call the hotline and let them know about what your experience was, and then they can
out
more. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I hadn't thought about it before, but I think those two places, I'm telling you, they're black. They don't even look
mm-hmm.
professional. And they're still every day. Right. In fact, the one lady told me, she said, it's a $60 for 30 minutes. Well, I'm not worried about that, but you don't look professional to me. I don't
mm-hmm.
know. It could be crispy critters in here. So, but anyway, but yeah, I'll be glad for someone to come out and just check and see really what they're doing in there. It could possibly be human traffic right here in Federal Way, you know. Or Des Moines. Yeah. This has been so interesting. We're almost at the close of the show. Doggone it. Audrey, my God, I enjoyed you so much. I don't even want the show to end, but I know it has to because I wanted to ask you real quick. I know it's about 4 minutes left, but I want to ask you, What's the, if you can, like the races that are involved? Is it a lot of white, black, Spanish, Asian? What do you see as far as maybe some that are more vulnerable than the others?
Great question. If we look at who our clients are, in the past year, we see that about 33% of our clients are African American, about 33% is Caucasian, and about 20% of our clients are multiracial. And then we also have representatives that are American Indian, Alaska Native, Asian, Indigenous, Native Hawaiian or Pacific Islander, and Latinx. And so,
oh wow, these are
clients,
people that'll help. These different races. Oh, wonderful.
I may have misunderstood. That is who our clients are.
Oh, the clients are. Oh, okay. I thought you mean the advocates that help the different races. Oh, okay. I understand now. You know, that's something. Let me ask you now: the people that you're dealing with, do they feel more comfortable with someone from their own culture, or is it that they don't? It doesn't matter at this point now.
Mm-hmm. I think in general, we always feel more comfortable with someone from our own culture. And I will say at REST, we do make efforts to be able to hire staff that do reflect who our clients are. I will also note, however, that that is a challenge when 33% of our clients are Black. And in King County, that statistic is 6%. And so we can first of all see that our African American community is overrepresented in our clients. And more vulnerable to the sex trade in that. To answer your question, I think there is this release that happens for individuals when you walk into a room and you just notice that you're not the only one that looks the way that you look. And whether that's your race or your age, even body size, I think it is beautiful when we can have a variety of faces and a variety of people who can be able to respond and allow folks to feel safe and comfortable in being exactly who they are.
Yes, yes. Thank God for you guys. Yes. Okay. Well, let me say this, and I'm going to let you close out the show. How can you help? If you or someone you know is being exploited, contact your local police. If you or someone you know needs help, speak to a trusted adult, family member, teacher, or school counselor, or contact a counselor anonymously at the Kids Help phone, which is 1-800-668-6868. Online is called www Kids Help Phone. The other one is Crime Stoppers, which we all know what Crime Stoppers, you can call them too, 1-800-222-8477 or 1-800-222-TIPS. Either way, 8477. So just to let you know. And of course, Audrey definitely gave you some good references too. Okay, Audrey, I'm giving you the closing word, young lady.
Thank you very much, Lennis, for having me on your show. And I want to thank everyone who has been listening for your interest and do encourage you to find the ways that your gifts meet the world's needs.
Amen. And we want to say from the Essence of Success Radio Network that we truly enjoyed Audrey Bedke and glad that she was able to be on the show. And you know what, you guys? I'm going to try and get her back into August or the 1st of September. See if I can get her back again. Again, thank you, people around the world, chat room and on the phone. We really appreciate you. And the show will be archived going to radio at the at the essenceofsuccess.net. Radio, scroll down, and you'll see her name in this show, okay? So you can listen at your leisure. Again, thank you so much, Audrey. You are a jewel, a diamond. And I just want to say to you, thank you for the work that you do, because I know it's not easy. God knows it's not. But thank you for reaching out, trying to help, you know, people in this life of human trafficking. So I, for one, appreciate you, and I'm grateful for you. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, we're on our way out. Everybody, I'll see you Friday night at 6 o'clock for Friday Traffic Jams. Have a good rest of the week. Be safe. Take care. And remember, if no one's told you they love you today, well, I do. Okay. Good night, Audrey.
Good night.